And we have a lot of folks going. We have a lot of people on vacation this week, but we welcome our visitors and very glad to be with each other. Les, would you open us with a prayer, please?
Dear Lord, we are so grateful that we are able to gather this morning on the first day of the week as we begin now to think about and study the Proverbs that you left for us, that we can become wise and know how to live in this life with a view of eternity in front of us. And we're so thankful that you've given us each life and breath and all things to the measure that we're able to gather here this morning and enjoy the company of one another and fellowship together and to learn more of your wisdom through your word. And pray that you would be with Philip and other teachers that are teaching this morning and help us to be attentive and to be more like Jesus as the days go along. In his name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Right. So today our topic is about friendship and influences. But of course, we're keeping in mind what we spent a lot of time on in the early weeks, and that is, what is wisdom? What does it mean to live wisely? What does it mean to avoid foolishness and these kinds of things? So what are some characteristics that have surfaced in our study of Proverbs so far that are characteristics of wisdom? Wisdom is what? Or wisdom means what? Or is associated with what?
Fear of the Lord.
Do what? Fear of the Lord? Okay, that's sort of the foundation of it, right? And why is wisdom and finding wisdom and walking with wisdom, why does it start with the fear of the Lord, you think?
Because it puts everything in perspective.
It is everything in perspective. I mean, what if we said, what is fear of the Lord?
Respect.
It does definitely involve respect. It does involve fear. Okay? But of course, it's broader than just like an emotional reaction that's negative, like fear. We even looked at some passages. Fear of the Lord involves what?
Knowledge.
Knowledge of who he is, recognition of him in that position, understanding of his ways, and ordering your life in such a way that reflects that. Okay? So definitely wisdom is associated with fear of the Lord. And where does all our wisdom originate? With God. So it's understandable that fear of the Lord is associated with wisdom. What other characteristics have we seen of wisdom?
Yeah. Wisdom is a path you choose. It's a lifestyle or whatever. It's a path you choose.
Right. Over and over in the Proverbs, either using terms like path or way or steps or road, wisdom is connected to walking a pathway, which is all just vivid, you know, imagery of the idea of your lifestyle, your way of living. And this is a very common way, even outside the Bible, that people talk about your way of life. And as your journey, your path of life, and those kinds of things, it's a very common way to look at that. And speaking of the idea of pathway, wisdom involves not just living on a certain path. What does wisdom say about our view of that path? Or even down that path?
Wisdom enlightens it.
That's right. There's a light that shined on it, that you have an understanding of this path. And do you ever get on a road not knowing where it goes? Occasionally, maybe. I'm talking about on purpose. we've got some visitors with us today. Welcome. We're so glad to have you. Good luck with the roads here. Anyway, that's just the way it's either like. They know, and that's okay. It's on purpose because we like you so much, once you get lost and have to stay. That's what it is, okay? But, of course, I like the mountain roads. So, but we don't typically get on a road that we don't know where it's going. The very reason why we get on a road is we're trying to get somewhere. So wisdom means you look down that road and you know where it's going to end up. It's going to end up in Knoxville, or it's going to end up in Atlanta, or it's going to end up in Charlotte. You didn't intend to end up in Cincinnati, so you don't get on that road. That's not where you want to go. So wisdom is oftentimes in this book associated with looking down that path and making a decision about where you want to go, where you want to end up. And wisdom means that you know where that's going to lead you. You know that if you make that choice or live that way, or as in today's lesson, allow others to affect you in a negative way, you know where that's going to take you, so you avoid that. A lot of wisdom in the book of Proverbs is knowing what road to avoid. We just talked last class about the temptress or the seductress who's trying to lure the young man down the wrong path, and that's exactly what we're seeing. So we're going to talk about friendship and influences today. So let's talk a little bit about friendship and the whole notion of friendship. So how would you define friendship? The term friend is actually used in the book of Proverbs. And what do we mean by friendship? Because we have different definitions. Yeah.
It's someone who you've grown close to over a period of time, that you trust in, that you confide in.
Okay.
Is someone who probably you have things in common with, that you share, and you share things together.
Okay. Yeah, good definitions. I see three core things there. It less identifies. One is there's a familiarity. One is there's things in common, and there's a trust that you depend on that person. Sometimes that can be misplaced trust. It's the wrong kind of friend, but we do usually associate some kind of dependency or trust with a friend. How do friendships form? What's the basis of them? Les sort of mentioned one, that is you have things in common. That happens. What are some other ways friendships form?
One has to take an issue. At least one has to take an
effort.
Issue.
Effort. You make an effort toward the other person, or initiative. Action. Yeah.
Experiences.
I mean, there are people who I've become friends with over the years because I was put into circumstances with them that if not for those circumstances, like a job or a neighborhood, then I would never have known them, or if I would have crossed their path, we wouldn't have developed a closeness. But because we spent time together and we had experiences together, even though we don't have a lot in common, we have that in common. So I think like what you're talking about, less in common, like interests, you know, certain kind of music or like doing a certain kind of activity or certain philosophy about life. But sometimes those we don't necessarily have those things in common with because we've just spent time with them, like at work or in the neighborhood, that we develop a friendship with them. So there's another question. So do friendships... Friendships change, don't they? Why? How and why do they change?
Because people grow. And sometimes their interest in worldview region, sometimes they can move away and maybe lose certain contacts with people that they would consider friends.
Okay.
But I think more than anything else, I don't have probably the same friends that I had in high school because I've grown away from those people that I knew in other ways.
Yeah. Right. Your word change, I think, is operative there. Sometimes the people change. Sometimes circumstances change. You're in different locations. You're in their circle on a regular basis, and then life circumstances change, and you're not in that circle anymore. Maybe the neighborhood or the workplace or something like that. Yeah. Anything else you think why relationships may change? Or friendship, rather. How and why? It may change.
It'll be tested.
Right. There's a problem. There's some kind of tension or test. And all friendships have tests. And sometimes going through those tests strengthens the friendship, but sometimes it can rupture it. And there's a separation there. And sometimes it's unfortunate. Sometimes it just has to be that way. Sometimes because one person is really trying to do what's right or something like that, and somebody commits an offense and they keep committing them or something like that, and that creates tension and so forth. Zach?
Also, just changes in schedules and priorities that either allow more or less time to be put into the relationship.
Yeah, the circumstances change that make it harder to spend time or see that person. And so friendships change, and it's not necessarily anybody's fault. It's just the natural progression of life. And sometimes there are purposes why they change. Sometimes good purposes and sometimes not so good purposes. So, well, with those things in mind, let's get into talking about the connection of this wise advice that we find in Proverbs about friendships. And I've got friendship and influences for the title. But let me give you a list of three things why friendship really is a spiritual issue, why it's a biblical issue. First of all, friendship reflects and shapes moral character. That who you're with affects you, and you have to at least be aware of it, and you have to take measures. Let me just say this, and I think we talked about this in another context, in another lesson before. The New Testament does not advocate the monastic lifestyle, that we pull away from society and we get into some cave somewhere or some, you know, monastery on top of a mountain, and we just completely cut ourselves off from everybody in the world. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 talks about that you'd have to go out of the world to get away from all the sinners. It's not advocating that. So we understand that one poor solution to negative influences is to cut all ties with people who don't follow God. How are we going to shine our light? How are we going to be salt of the earth? How are we going to do a myriad of things the New Testament tells us to do? However, you've got to realize that other people can affect you negatively. You've got to be aware of that. You've got to do things in such a way that you keep yourself orientated in the right direction. But friendships do shape our moral character. And friendship decisions and friendship actions are based upon our values and our goals. So what's important to us? And what are we trying to accomplish with our lives? And friendships, we've seen that friendships just naturally form. We've talked about that. But there are also conscious decisions we make about friendships. And sometimes our values spiritually lead us to make some changes in relationships. It may not be that we cut the friendship, but we make some adjustments about it. For instance, there are some things that people do and places they go that if you're following the Lord, you may be friends with somebody, but you say, hey, can't go there with you. I'm not going to go do that. And hey, if you want to go fishing, or if you want to go golfing, or if you want to go and, you know, I go help you, you know, pick out a new car or something like that. But if you're going to go do that thing, you know, sorry, I'm not going to go there. And we've all been there, haven't we, as Christians? You know, you've been that person where you get invited to this thing, but you find out later they were hitting the bar after work on Friday night, and you didn't get an invitation. It's pretty clear why you didn't get the invitation, because they know you're not going to go. You don't do that. And so sometimes we have to lay down boundaries in our relationships. And we can say that about family too, right? Same thing about family relationships. And third of all, friendships, and these are really good points to take into looking at these texts we're going to look at. Friendships are enjoyable. And friendships are a social comfort to us. But we need to look at friendships beyond just in the domain of joy and comfort, but also, what are some friendships that can help me spiritually, and what are some friendships where I can help others spiritually? And I think it's very wise and very Christ-like to maintain some friendships that maybe life circumstances have changed, like we've been talking about. You move out of the neighborhood, or you move across state, or several states away, or you don't work at that job anymore. I think there are some relationships that are worth maintaining, because there might be a hope that you can influence them for Christ. And so it's not like that it's just one of those natural friendships, that's the person you like hanging out with at lunch, you know, at the workplace, but rather you cultivate that relationship because you know you can have a spiritual influence on that person. So I want you to see friendship broadly. And actually, the last text we'll look at this morning will definitely say that. So let's look at some wise principles and the counsel that we get from the book of Proverbs. So we're going to go to Proverbs chapter 1. And this is actually a text that we referenced, I think, the first lesson, and we read a little bit from it. When we were looking at this introductory section, most all the other ones we're going to be looking at are after chapter 10 or after chapter 9, and we've talked about how the Proverbs 1 through 9 lay out the subject of wisdom and elaborates on the nature of it, and then you start in chapter 10 getting the little pithy statements, the wise, you know, sayings. But look at this here in Proverbs 1. Tristan, will you read for us verses 10 to 19? This is the counsel to the young man from the father.
My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our house with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners.
All right, thank you. In the nature of poetry, when things are being communicated in a vivid fashion with a lot of strong imagery, oftentimes it's almost hyperbole, but for sure it is an extreme case that's being laid out. And it may not be that every time that there is a game trying to influence you or a group trying to influence you negatively in your morals, that it's done quite like this. Hey, let's go jump on these people, kill them, and take everything they've got. It may not be quite that overt, but there are elements here where you've got a group who are preying upon a younger person to pull them into what they're doing for immediate benefit and gain, and you almost sense that they're enjoying this, that they're getting a kick out of this. And it is a destructive thing, it is a dangerous thing, and foolish is the one who gives in to that. Okay, so, but in essence, what we're looking at here is the idea of a group trying to influence you to go down the wrong path. Talking about path earlier. Now, context here, father and son. And we oftentimes talk about peer pressure and young people. And peer pressure, I think when I was a teenager, I heard the term peer pressure. It's been around a long time. It's a good one. It's very apt in its description. Why is this a particular challenge for somebody who's young? When you're young, yes.
What's being described here, if it was in today's world, would be a game.
That's described like a game.
Yeah. So if you think about an inner city gang, let's say, who's dealing in drugs, right, worse, human trafficking, whatever,
right,
and illegal things that are happening. What happens sometimes, especially with a boy who is growing up, maybe without a father figure in the home, and the gang begins to become his family.
Yeah.
So his loyalty and his allegiance becomes not to his blood family or mother, but rather to the gang family. Okay. And so he identifies with them. And I forgot what the question was.
Yeah, I mean, just the idea of why is it particularly challenging for young people, this ordeal? And isn't it interesting, your game parallel, let me say this, so many things in the Bible shows that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Is there anything new under the sun, Ecclesiastes? Yeah, go ahead.
Right, and most, when people, begin to get in their later teens, perhaps, they want to be identified as an individual separated from their mother and father, to have their own identity separate from their family. And that's just another sort of opportunity for the devil to come in and say, get with this group, you know, who's doing these evil things, and they'll be your, they'll be your comrades.
I want to throw this in. This is totally anecdotal and totally my opinion on this. I think that several decades ago, I think in our culture, the real critical stage for a young person regarding moral influences was their teen years, or we would say their high school years. I think now it really is more the young adult years. It's the post-high school, it's the college years. I think there's probably, oftentimes if a young person was going to take a wrong turn, decades ago they did it when they were in high school. Now it's usually after they get out of the house. And I guess I could sit down and maybe think of some reasons why. I don't really have all the reasons, I'm just what I see. And so I think this point is good, that it's when a young person is establishing their independence. This is a real crucial time regarding what path they take. Real crucial. Is this only a challenge for young people? I hate to say that I've known Christians who lived for several years as a faithful follower of Christ, and then they started hanging around a different crowd. That completely, they changed and left the Lord. Now, obviously, they weren't made to do that. They chose to do that. But one of the instrumental stages was when they started to identify with a group that had a negative effect on them. And again, a monastic lifestyle where you separate yourself from everybody who doesn't follow Christ is unrealistic and unbiblical. But we have to be wise in those relationships. That's the point. And so why is it even powerful over people who aren't, quote, young? Peer pressure. Why is it powerful over any of us?
No one wants to be an outcast. Okay. But, yeah, at the same time, that's what Jesus pretty much calls us to do.
Yeah. Separate. Yeah. Yeah, I think you've identified something there, Dave, is that there is a tendency in every human being to want to belong and want to be accepted. And that's not all bad, because what do we find with the Lord? A belonging and acceptance and a family. So that's the point there. Well, let's look at some of these others here, and then we're going to get into the pithy statements. Look at 1628. 1628. Can you read that one for us, Ray Cone? 16, verse 28.
A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends.
Okay. A dishonest man spreads strife, a whisperer separates close friends. Some translations here say perverse rather than dishonest, a dishonest man or a perverse person. And how do they show strife? This is Hebrew parallelism. How's the strife created?
Whispering.
Whispering. What does this mean here, whisper?
God.
Okay. This is telling things about others to someone else. How do we know that? Because it ends up separating friends. There's a social impact. So it's not like a whisper, like, hey, pass me the, when you're at a meeting at work and you're, hey, pass me the salt, when you're at a luncheon here and you're working and you don't want to interrupt the speaker. It's not that kind of whisper. It's like, hey, did you know that woman over there that just got hired, that she's, and you want to want to say something that's negative and so forth. So what we're talking about here is the idea of talking about others to someone that ends up damaging their relationships. The whisper separates friends. We have a view of someone over here. It may be just by observation. It could be by interaction with that person. It could be some gossip we hear about them. That somebody said this to me, who said that to them, and said that to them, and who knows the truth, okay? Whether there's any truth in it or not. Could be some, could be none. But because I have this view of this person, it may be a legitimate view because of my own experience with them. Maybe they're not honest like they need to be. I've seen that they're not an honest person. But I feel obligated to go to this person and say something to them about that person, maybe even knowing that they're friends, for the purpose of messing up that friendship. Now, obviously, if I've got a friend here and they're about to go into a business deal and borrow $250,000 off from a bank with this person, and I know this person is dishonest, I may feel obligated to say, hey, I've got to share this with you because I know, not from gossip, but experience, that you're stepping into something dangerous. That's different. But I say this about this person because I want that person to think badly of them. I'm just trying to run that person down. I may have legitimate reasons for it. I may not. It may just be suspicions. It may just be gossip that I've got. But I want to say, you know the way that we talk. I've heard, or one time they did this, and we're trying to poison this person about that person. And what this is getting to, look at the outcome. It separates friends. What's your intent? Are you trying to help and protect someone, or are you just trying to take a sledgehammer and bust something up just for the sake of busting it up? And, you know, sort of the same kind of behavior, but for a different reason. If this person really is a problem, it is best for that person to learn it on their own. Instead of me giving that person the version, here's my version, here's Phillip's version of that person. As if you've got to think the way I think. And it may be that my one-time interaction with that person is not representative. That they're not generally that kind of person, whether it's, you know, rude or dishonest or whatever. But I've got to get other people to look at that person the way I look at that person. What's behind that is the intent to bust up friendships. And that's portrayed negatively here. If somebody has interaction with someone else, let them learn that person. Let them come to their own conclusions. And let them make a decision regarding their friendship instead of inserting yourself. So this is a prime example of how there are so many layers to these wise sayings. You begin to contemplate the application of them. And it's very broad and deep. Okay? Anything on that one? All right, let's go to the next one. Chapter 17, verse 9. Ken, can you read that for us, please? 17 and verse 9.
He who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends.
All right, thank you. The covering here in verse 9, whoever covers an offense. Well, what does this mean? Does this mean cover up? Usually that's a negative thing, right? Cover up something. But what does this mean?
Forgiveness,
forbearance. All the terms we find so often used in the epistles about our relationships, forbearance and patience and grace and mercy and forgiveness, that's really what we're talking about here. And look at this is This is a similar statement to 1628 in its outcome of the second part. Whoever repeats a matter separates close friends. That's what we were talking about a while ago. Oh, let me tell you what I've heard about this person. And you're just going around driving wedges between people. And there are people who like to do that. Because they don't want to see other people have friendships. Jealous or insecure or whatever. So they want to drive a wedge between you and everybody they know. And it's a really pathetic kind of mentality in a way. So they said, oh, you're friends with them? Great. If there's a benefit you get from that, and you benefit them, you know, that's a good thing. But this is the person who repeats things and separates friends. And what's the real difference between the first part, the one who covers an offense, and I think this is it. I mean, I think this is, I'm going to give you this scenario. So here's this person, we're calling person A. And they spoke to me harshly on some occasion. They were very curt with me and completely impolite and just even hateful. And so I run, and I tell somebody else about it. Well, I can know that person another 20 years, and they never do that again. Who knows what's happening that day? Instead of covering that and saying, you know, I'm going to be forgiving. I'm going to let that go. You know? It's different than, you know, somebody who's stalking the neighborhood with a gun, shooting people, and you calling and warning your neighbor, don't let your kids go outside. It's a different scenario. But it's the idea that I'm going to be forgiving to this person and give them the benefit of the doubt, because the truth is, who a person is will eventually surface with everybody. You don't have to go around reporting on the wrongdoers. Usually that will surface. But look at the contrast here. The real difference is in motive, isn't it? The first person is trying to do what? All right, they're seeking love. They're seeking what's best for somebody else. Look at the motive of the second person. What's their motive? They want to separate friends. So see the contrast there. Anything else in 17:9? Yeah, Tristan. You can.
I think a biblical example of what you're talking about is kind of when Noah got drunk and Ham, you know, went and told instead of, like, that wasn't part of his typical character. You know, Noah was a very...
yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Overall, but this was a weak moment that he did something wrong, which everybody does, you know, something wrong. And some people just, like, expose it, but the right thing to do is, you know, maybe that's not in their character. I'm going to just... you know, protect them from gossip, basically.
Right, right. And it's not covering up sin or wrong character as much as you're trying to help the person not to, you know, destroy themselves. And there was a covering up in that story, too. But they're literally... Ken, what did you want to add to that?
Well, just, you know, when you, if you go repeat some wrong that's been done to you at the drop of a hat, and, you know, later in the day, that person that did it comes to you and apologizes,
oh, that's right.
You know? It's like a headline on the front page and the retraction on page 17.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great point. That's very insightful. Isn't it better to be patient with that person and then they come around and repent and there you gain your brother, and that's all a good outcome rather than trying to, you know, throw shade on them, as they say, as the kiddos say. All right, great point. Thank y'all both for that. Look at chapter 18, verse 24. 18:24, Hilton, can you read that for us, please? 18, verse 24.
Man who has friends must himself be friendly, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother.
Okay, I'm going to throw a second one in there. Hilton, back up to chapter 17 and read verse 17, please. They sort of go together.
A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity.
Okay. What's valuable in friendships? Look at 18:24. What's valuable in friendships? Is it the trust? Okay. Is it the number of friends you have? Is it quantity? Sure, quality, isn't it? A trustworthy friend. And back in chapter 17, verse 17, it's a friend who what? What's a true friend?
They're with you through hard times and they love you at all.
That's right. They're there during adversity. A friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. Friend is loyal, consistent, even when times are tough. And I don't think this is... I'm a fairly non-social media person, and I try not to be judgmental toward those who are, okay? It's easy to do that, okay? Because so many negatives in social media, and probably I need to use it more for positive things. I don't think this is regulated just to social media. I think people have always been this way, but boy, it really is enhanced with social media. Look how many friends I have, okay? Look at how many friends I have on social media. Well, friends on Facebook or something like that is about as shallow, it's about as deep as a thimble, right? It's shallow. There's nothing to that. Doesn't take a whole, all it takes is a couple of clicks to be friends with somebody on Facebook. But this kind of friendship, quality is what matters. All right, let's look at another one. 22:24-25. Zachary, can you read that? 22:24-25.
Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare.
Okay. What are all the potential negatives of this kind of friendship?
Become like him.
You become like, the one that's emphasized in this text is you become like him. Now that goes back to our initial little list, our template list as we went into the Proverbs, and that is that friendship shapes your moral character. So here's somebody who's quarrelsome, who's got a temper, who's wrathful and angry all the time. You know, you may have to interact with them, and you may even interact with them in a way that you maintain some kind of relationship to help them. But if you become like close companions and bosom buddies with that person, that can adversely affect you. That can corrupt your character. Okay. Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of some people just have a negative attitude and view of everything. And if you hang around people with a negative view of everything, you start to think negatively about everything. Same thing would be true with someone who's just angry about everything all the time.
Yeah, exactly right. It does have an effect. And, you know, there you can think of all kinds of things. You know, when I think of a wrathful person, I'm like, well, just wait. If you're their friend, you're going to catch that wrath. They're going to aim it at you at some point. You're foolish if you think they're going to be mad at everybody else and never mad at you. You know, you're not the exception. So, I mean, there are all kinds of negative things, but the one that the text really emphasizes is how it impacts your character and takes you down the wrong path there. Look at 27:6. 27:6. Proverbs 27, verse 6. Frank, you have that one for us?
Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful.
Okay. Look at each part. The friend in this text actually does what? What's his action?
Affirmation.
Do I know?
Kind of affirmation.
Yeah, they are proving their friendship, that's for sure. What are you getting from this friend at the beginning of verse 6?
He's not afraid to rebuke you.
Right. Need to be he's wounding you, which means whatever he's doing is hurting you. It hurts. Remember back over in, like, we looked at this about chapter 9, verse 9. If you rebuke a scholar, how does he react? Do you take it well? No. The wise man, if you rebuke a wise man, what does he do? 9:9. You remember in general? The scoffer and the fool gets all upset because you're trying to correct them. But the wise man, what? He takes it and he looks at himself and he makes changes and learns, it says there. He gains understanding by that self-reflection. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. A true friend will tell you the truth, even when the truth what? Hurts you. But what about the enemy in this verse? What is he doing? What is he giving you?
Flattery.
Flattery and kisses. He's just, he's buttering you up. He just smoochy, smoochy, smoochy. Up and down. But he's really your enemy. Why is he kissing on you? Why is he bragging on you? Why is he lathering butter on you? For an opportunity to stab you in the back and get you later. He lets your guard down. Think he's won you over. Take advantage of you. Manipulate you. All those kinds of things. So,
what Judas did to Jesus.
Judas, I mean, literally, Judas kissed Jesus and betrayed, in the process of betraying him. Great example. Thank you. And don't get upset with someone and write them off because you hear something from them you don't like. That might be the best friend you've got on this earth. That's telling you something you don't want to hear. But it takes wisdom to see that, doesn't it? See, the foolish person is all about how you feel in the moment. I can't believe you said that. That hurts my feelings. Rather than, okay, they said that. And if I really take that to heart, as Frank said, I examine myself, that can lead to a better path. I want to go down a better path. But you know what? You've really helped me. You're really my friend. And so it's the wise person who can see past the feelings and the immediate hurt and see the outcome of that. It takes a lot of wisdom there. And I look back on some people who told me some hard things. And how much I love them now. At the time, may not felt that way. And I can look back on some people who used to butter me up. I can give you a list of people in my life that butter me up the most. It didn't end well. They didn't prove to be a real friend in the end. And that's that thing you learn with some experience, right? My dad always said, the best friendships are those that form slowly. And that was one of my dad's proverbs. He said, the best friendships and relationships are those that form slowly. In other words, somebody just giving you the rush and making over you and acting like you're their best friend, you've been known for 5 minutes. What's up with that? That's shallow. But when you really get to, what my dad was saying was, when you really get to know someone, and you build up this understanding of each other and this trust with each other, and you learn to respect them, that's the best kind of friendship. Best kind. Okay. Isn't this great? I mean, aren't these proverbs just great and so needed? Thank you so much for your participation. Keep reading.